Vaydaber Adonai el Moshe acharei Mos shnei b'nei Aaron bekorvasam lifnei Adonai vayamusu. And God spoke to Moshe after the deaths of Aaron's two sons, Nadav and Avihu, when they attempted to come too close to God, and they were killed. Dot, dot, dot. Vaydaber Adonai el Moshe lemor daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael v'yomarta alehem kidoshim tihyu ki kadosh ani Adonai Eloheichem. And God spoke to Moshe saying, speak to all of the people of Israel and say to them, be holy, because holy I am, Hashem, your God.
Hello, I hope I haven't kept you waiting. Come right over. Chair by the window. Comfortable?
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Acharei Kedoshim. Recording and first availability, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the sixth day of Iyar, 5780, corresponding this year to April 30th. Last night we counted 21 to the Omer, which meant a performance of two mitzvot at the same time. When we said Hayom Echad Ve'esrim Yom, today is 21 days, Sheheim Shlosha Shavuot La'Omer, which are 3 weeks of the Omer. Just as a side point, when Sfaradim, Edot Mizrach, count the Omer, they say, Hayom Echad Ve'esrim Yom La'Omer, Sheheim Shlosha Shavuot. There are reasons on both sides. I'm not going to get into that now. I do want to tell you about a couple of new things today, which I don't know if I will continue. Probably not. But maybe. One of them is that I have come to a decision about what music I play during the Omer, different from the 3 weeks and 9 days that lead up to Tisha B'Av. During the Omer, since the halachic mandate is linhog, to practice ketzat avelut, a little bit of mourning, token mourning, in the form of not having weddings and not cutting the hair, that how far you go in weddings till music, which at one time, the only live music that people listen to were at events like weddings, and now there are recordings and everything like that, but I follow the guideline of a cappella, voice only, not musical instruments. And that's what you heard at the beginning, and you'll hear the whole song later, and then another one at the end of the show. Second thing I did, sort of just for fun, is recorded a very short video of on Zoom, one-on-one, did not bring anybody into the chat, and I recorded the Shalom welcome to introduction that I give to the show, partially to say hello in person, so to speak, face-to-face, or face-to-ears and eyes. And secondly, I was wearing a mask, which is mandated here as well as in many, many other places. And I have a video of my flag from my mirpeset, my balcony, fluttering in the back to lead me into a brief look back at Yom HaAtzma'ut before we get into the parsha of Acharei Mot and Kedoshim. I also would point out that the name for the first of the two sedras we read this week used to be, as far as I know, universally Acharei Mot, and somewhere along the line it was shortened to Acharei, probably because Mot means death, and you get the point when you say Acharei anyway, so a lot of times it's referred to as Acharei Kedoshim or Acharei Mot Kedoshim. I will probably keep to Acharei. 2 days ago on Tuesday, which was Yom HaZikaron L'Chalalei Tzahal and Victims of Terror, I recorded a pre-Yom HaAtzma'ut show, which you can find on the website ttidbits.com. I decided, in addition to a show for this Shabbat, I would also have something special for Yom HaAtzma'ut. And I was planning that today's show, recorded on Thursday as I usually do, would be straight Acharei Mot Kedoshim. But I felt the need to add a couple of points in retrospect to the Yom HaAtzma'ut. First of all, the complaints that some from the religious community who are non-Zionistic or who are not religious Zionists or who are anti-Zionistic or who are anti-Medina, and I don't know how you want to label yourself or anyone else, labeling is not such a good idea, but those people who have either a negative or a parve attitude towards the state of Israel, as opposed to Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, I would say the following. The very first act of the establishment of the state, the very, very first, was the announcement of its existence as a Jewish state. And significantly, the announcement was made 8 hours early. It originally was supposed to be made at the end of the British mandate, when Britain pulled out of Palestine, and that was midnight on Friday. In respect for the Shabbat, to avoid unfortunate desecration of the Shabbat, the announcement of the state was made 8 hours early. Again, I say, that was the very first act of statehood. You can't get earlier in statehood than announcing the existence of the state. And it was scheduled because of respect for Shabbat. Shortly thereafter, there was the bracha with Hashem's name of Shehechiyanu v'kiyamanu v'higiyanu lizman hazeh. So whenever anyone tells me, and I'm not getting into many, many, many other examples of very religious flavor that this supposedly secularly established Medina is and has, I'm not even getting into that. I just wanted to reiterate that that's how it started. Furthermore, or next point, Yom HaAtzma'ut is the 5th of Iyar. That was the date on which the state was established. Ironically, it was supposed to be midnight, which means it would have been already the 6th of Iyar. But Yom HaAtzma'ut is celebrated on the 5th. When the 5th fell out on Shabbat, aside from the very first year, and either Friday or Shabbat, the rabbinate convinced the Knesset, we'll say, I don't know the exact dynamics of it, but there was a decision made, a request and a decision made, in order to avoid desecration of the Shabbat, that Yom HaAtzma'ut ceremonies be pulled back to Thursday. So when Yom HaAtzma'ut falls out on a Friday, you pull it back to Thursday. When it falls out on a Shabbat, you pull it back 2 days to Thursday. Then many years later, when it came out on Monday, it was pushed to Tuesday, and there it got its Vav Iyar, ironically. And the reason for that is that the day before Monday Yom HaAtzma'ut would have been Yom HaZikaron, Sunday, which begins on Motzoi Shabbat, which would have resulted in Shabbat violations, even by people who don't care. And it was pushed to Tuesday. Now, the amazing thing of all of this is that the rabbinate could have said, thank you for moving the national commemorations and celebrations away from Shabbat in order to preserve the sanctity of Shabbat. But as far as the religious observance of the day, the special davening and hallel and a haftorah without a bracha and whatever other religious components there is to the date, there would be no reason for that not to stay on the 5th of Iyar. You could say hallel on Shabbat. You could read Od Hayom Benov La'amod on a Friday, but the rabbinate, in its wisdom, said there is no such thing as a national Yom HaAtzma'ut and a religious Yom HaAtzma'ut. We are one people with one land, with one state, and we will celebrate however people celebrate on the day designated, and that counts as everything moving to that day. So Thursday, which sometimes could be the 3rd of Iyar or the 4th of Iyar, and Tuesday, which could be the 6th of Iyar, that's the day that we daven, special for Yom HaAtzma'ut, and that's the day that all the national celebrations take place. And I think that is a very, very special thing. What made my Yom HaAtzma'ut extra special, even though I didn't go to my daughter in Modi'in for our traditional barbecue, also known as mangal, which isn't even a Hebrew word, it's a Turkish word. Al Ha'esh is what people call it in Hebrew, but the real word from the Academia LaLashon HaEvrit is Matzleh, Mem Tzadi Lamed Hey, Matzleh. But everybody says mangal. You say matzleh to someone, they won't know what you're talking about. So even though it was a very isolated Yom HaAtzma'ut for everybody, it was special, extra special for me, not yesterday. Yesterday I had a wonderful Yom HaAtzma'ut. But today, when I received a link from a cousin of mine of a shiur that the Rav Soloveitchik gave back in 1955 on Yom HaAtzma'ut. It was in Yiddish with English subtitles. I highly recommend people to go on to YouTube, put in Soloveitchik, Creation of the State, and you will have the longer title there and the three parts, one after the other, of the Shir. It was magnificent. It was unique. I mean, everyone who knows the Rav or knows of the Rav knows how one of a kind he was. And he definitely showed it in this Shir. I just wanted to highlight one point that he made. He said, we have not one thing, the establishment of the state, to thank God for, but we have several different things to thank him for in the process. He pointed out that the United Nations vote to in favor of partitioning Palestine and providing a home for the Jews, which was made on the 29th of November 1947, is something to thank God for. Because without it, there wouldn't have been a state of Israel. But he says there's more. Right after that resolution was passed, and he also spoke about the conditions at the time which led it to be passed, which would not have prevailed a few years later or even a year later. But that's, you could listen to the Rav himself or read the subtitles of the Rav himself. He says, right after the vote in favor of partition, the United Nations and the United States State Department regretted that there was a vote in favor of Palestine being split between the Arabs and the Jews, giving the Jews part of Eretz Yisrael. He said, we have to be thankful for that also, because the state came about not because the United Nations voted to let us have a state, proof of which is they regretted it right after. It's in spite of the fact that they regretted the vote. Yes, it's because of the vote in favor and in spite of the regret of having voted in a positive way, that when we established the state, it was not, thank you, United Nations, for letting us do that, because now we see you didn't want us to do that. But we established the state. We were immediately attacked by the Arabs, which the United Nations had said won't happen. And once that happened, we won the war, and the state was a fact on the ground that was our doing with God's help, and not thanks to the United Nations. And he quoted the Pesach Haggadah and the Chumash and Shemot, where a similar idea happens. When Moshe first went to Paro and said, let my people go, God says, let my people go, and if not, we will smite your firstborns. Paro said, you got to be kidding. I should let you guys out? Moshe only asked for 3 days out, which remains an interesting question until you hear what the Rav said about it. So Paro said no. And not only did Paro said no, if you guys have such leisure that you want to go out 3 days into the wilderness to pray and sacrifice to your God, then you obviously have time on your hands. So I will not have straw delivered to you with a quota of how many bricks you have to bake in a day. You'll have to pick your own straw, and no shortening of the quota and no shortening of the no lengthening of the time that you have to do it. Moshe was very disturbed by that, because the Jews in charge of the workforces were beaten, and the people were dejected, and Moshe felt that not only he failed, but that God had failed. And God said to him, let me explain it to you. If Paro would have been a nice guy and said to you, oh, you're only asking for 3 days, go ahead, take them, and put in a good word for me, then it would be he who released us from Egypt, and he who expected us back in 3 days, rightly so, to the point where the Haggadah says, Ilu lo hotzi HaKadosh Baruch Hu et avoteinu mimitzrayim, had it not been God who took us out of Egypt, Hare anu uvanenu uvnei vanenu mishubadim hayinu lefaro bimitzrayim. We and our children and our children's children would still be enslaved to Egypt. The obvious question is, what, we wouldn't have gotten out some other way? Wouldn't matter. If he had let us out, and not God had manifestly taken us out, then we would still owe a debt of gratitude to Paro, the great emancipator, notwithstanding the fact that he oppressed the people for over 100 years. But we would still be psychologically enslaved by Egypt, because when they wanted to enslave us, they did. And when they magnanimously allowed us out, that's why we got out. Wasn't like that. It was against Paro's better judgment. Thank God. But Paro changed his mind many, many times. And he did not send us out of Egypt. Ilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu lahotzi et avoteinu. Had God not been the one to be the obvious one who took us out of Egypt, we would still be enslaved to Paro. Similarly, said the Rav, had the United Nations kept to its plan and was happy about it and magnanimously allowed the Jews to have part of Eretz Yisrael as their own home, we would not have the Negev, we would not have much of the Galil, and we would not have a lot of the territory that we did have from 1948 until 67. And in 67, we ended up with more territory, not because the United Nations was generous, not because the world's countries were generous, and certainly not because the Arabs were generous. The Arabs fought a war to annihilate the Jewish people. And the conquering of the old city of Jerusalem and reuniting of Yerushalayim and of Hebron and Shechem, even though there's still contention there, but who knows what sovereignty will be applied exactly to where, we'll see. But we were on the road, we are on the road, towards being here and living here and being entitled to, because of God, with the help of the government and the army of Israel. Not because the world was nice to us. And that's very significant, because in the same way, we would still be Mishubadim Hayinu to the United Nations. I thought it was very powerful. I thought much of what he said was very powerful. I'm even tempted to tell you more, but I'd rather you look up on YouTube, put in the word Soloveitchik, put in the word creation of the State of Israel, and read the footnotes, obviously, unless you're fluent in Yiddish, and see how unique the Rav Zatzal was. Bum bum ba 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 bum bum ba. And now I am finally ready to get into the Parsha of the week. Achrimot, Acharei, and Kedoshim are combined in every 12-month year known as a Shana Peshuta, a plain year, a regular year, one Adar, 12 months. Acharei and Kedoshim are combined. And in a Shana Meuberet, an expanded year with 13 months and two Adars, they are split. They're one of only two pairs that don't have an exception to that rule. So this is straight. In a Shana Peshuta like this year, Acharei and Kedoshim are combined, and in a Shana Meuberet, they are split and read separately. As a side point, in the year of my bar mitzvah, Pesach had gone from Shabbat to Shabbat in the States, Shabbat to Friday here in Israel, and the Parsha Shavua got out of sync for a number of weeks. So rather than have the really special Parshiot of Acharei and Kedoshim, my bar mitzvah shedra, also special part of the Torah, was Tazria Mitzorah. And for a 13-year-old boy, there wasn't any great topics to make a Devar Torah. There were other things to talk about. But Acharei Mot and Kedoshim, Acharei and Kedoshim are really solid mitzvah parshiot with a lot to talk about. Now, Acharei has 28 mitzvot. Two positive commandments, mitzvot asei, 26 prohibitions. That's a very imbalance, very large imbalance. And it fits because a great number of those prohibitions are the various forbidden sexual relations that are practiced as part of not violating adultery or incest and other prohibitions like that. At the beginning of the Seder, you have some of the Yom Kippur mitzvot and a couple of Beit HaMikdash things, but by and large the Sedra is heavy on the Arayot. So I'm not going to spend time on that. I want to take a look more at Kedoshim. Kedoshim is a fairly small Sedra, 64 psukim, average for Torah is about 108. The largest parsha has 176, not so. And even though Kedoshim is not the smallest, it's one of the smallest. But it has 51 mitzvot, broken down to 13 positive commands and 38 prohibitions, not as easily categorized as those in Acharei. The topics vary, including all kinds of types of mitzvot, like between a person and his fellow and between a person and God, like those that have to do with Eretz Yisrael and those that are to be observed all over. And however you want to cut it, there are many, many different, not only different mitzvot, but different kinds of mitzvot. One of the statistics that I invented for Torah Tidbits is called mitzvah density. Because just to say that there are 51 mitzvot in Kedoshim, but there are 53 in Mishpatim, and there are 55 in Re'eh, and 63 in next week's Emor, and 74 in Ki Teitse, doesn't give you a true picture of how packed a Sedra could be with mitzvot. Because among those high numbers, Kedoshim is the smallest, and its mitzvah density is the greatest of any Sedra in the Torah. Add to that, that there is a whole bunch of other mitzvot mentioned in Kedoshim that have already been counted, mostly in Acharei, and it is unbelievably crowded with mitzvot. And that's very, very fitting because of the name of the Sedra and the opening command of the Sedra. Kedoshim Tihiyu, be holy. Obvious question is, what does that mean? How does a human being, a Jew, become holy? The answer is basically demonstrated in the rest of the parsha, which is mitzvah after mitzvah after mitzvah. But it's not just numbers. It's quality of mitzvot, attitude about mitzvot, and commitment to mitzvot, and to go beyond the requirement of the letter of the law in keeping of the spirit of the law. That is all considered part of Kedoshim Tihiyu, to the point where the Rambam and the Sefer HaChinuch do not count Kedoshim Tihiyu, you shall be holy, as one of the 613 mitzvot. It's in a category by itself, of which several other mitzvot, several other commands of the Torah can be found. And that is that it's an all-encompassing thing, and it's like an added value to all of the mitzvot. There's a mitzvah in the Torah to say Birkat HaMazon after you eat a full satisfying meal. You recite Birkat HaMazon by rote. Technically, you fulfill the obligation of the Torah to bench. But Kedoshim Tihiyu says, sit down, concentrate about what you're going to say, say it with kavanah, say it with feeling, saying it like you are actually thanking and showing appreciation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to God. That's part of Kedoshim Tihiyu. Now, when you have a sedra that has one or two or three mitzvot, which many of them do and some don't have any, 17 sedras don't have any mitzvot, and there are a bunch that have a few, many mitzvot, many sedras are just in the single digits, to the point where 28 from Acharei is a lot, but not compared with the 51 from Kedoshim. Anyway, when you have a sedra that has relatively few mitzvot, you can study the sedra by studying its mitzvot, if that's your particular approach and slant that you like, and you could probably do a decent job at all of them. When you've got 51 mitzvot, that is a very, very difficult thing to do. But what having 51 mitzvot packed into Kedoshim allows you to do, which is not the only seder that allows that, but it allows you to see bunches of mitzvot and learn something from that also. For example, the farmer that has a field or a vineyard is not allowed to cut, to reap his entire field. He has to leave a corner of a certain amount by rabbinic recommendation for poor people to take from. He cannot pick up bundles of wheat or clusters of grapes that fall on the ground while he is harvesting. He has to leave that for poor people. Now, that sounds like one mitzvah, which applies to a field of grain as well as an orchard as well as a vineyard. But it turns out that in the counting of the 613 mitzvot, based on the verses in Kedoshim, you have a positive command to leave the corner of your field. You have a prohibition to cut the entire field, not leaving a corner. If that sounds like the same, it is, except it's opposite sides of the same coin. And I'll address that issue in a minute. And you have a positive command not to collect the grapes from your entire vineyard, and a prohibition of picking them clean, which is another two sides of a same coin, of a different coin. And then the gleanings and that which drops, each has a positive mitzvah and a prohibition, which means what could be categorized as the single mitzvah area of not taking everything from your field and leaving it to the poor translates into eight different mitzvot in the 613. Now, without going into all of the aspects of this, the significant difference, as I've said in the past, between prohibitions, thou shalt not, and mitzvot aseh, you shall do, is one of attitude and feeling, and I'm really missing the right word. Maybe you'll find it, but I'll explain what I mean. Don't cut the entire field. Don't pick the entire vineyard. Don't do this, don't do that, don't eat or drink on Yom Kippur, don't do a melacha on Shabbat, don't. It sounds like a child being told not to do things. I don't mean to demean the mitzvot lo taaseh, they have a very important function, obviously. There are more of them than positive mitzvot. But the main motivation for not violating a don't do that is Yirat Hashem, reverence and fear of God, fear of heaven, Yirat Shamayim, fear of sin, fear of punishment. And that's not the whole story. When you are told not to cut the corner of your field, we're using that as the example here, but there are many other examples, then it's God commanding you what not to do, and his intention is that poor people should have it available for themselves. But when he commands you the positive mitzvah of leaving Peah, the corner of the field, then he is making you a partner with him and helping to feed the poor. It's a mitzvah, it's a prohibition as well, but when it is presented, which it is, as Le'oni v'la'ger ta'azovoto, leave it for the poor people, then A, the motivation is Ahavat Hashem. I am doing this not just because I don't want to be punished, but because I want to do what God wants me to do. And in this particular case, it becomes a partnership between God and the Jew in the performance of the positive commandments. We had this with Shabbat, not from this Sedra, but we had it back in Yitro in the Aseret HaDibro, the Ten Commandments, where we were forbidden to do any manner of work on Shabbat, melacha, creative activities. And in Parshat Mishpatim, where we were commanded the positive command to abstain from violating a melacha, which sounds like the same thing, but a tremendous difference. Punishment for intentional, willful desecration of the Shabbat can be a capital offense. In the time of Sanhedrin, it could be by the courts. In all times, it could be God, and that's his decision. But it is a very frightful thing, if you care about mitzvot, to violate those things. On the other hand, by being commanded to abstain from melacha, and I always love to quote Dayan Grunfeld in his book, The Sabbath, a thin, modest volume, which I believe every Jew, observant or not, should read once a year. For those who are observant of Shabbat, it is a wonderful booster shot. And for those who are not, it's a very fine introduction, which should lead to further reading and further study. In there, he describes the positive command to abstain from melacha as taking the creative gifts that God gave humanity through their intellect and ingenuity, and that we tend to take for granted. I was the one who made a delicious omelet. You're missing the point. God created the chicken and the egg and the other ingredients that you put in the omelet. And more than that, He gave you the intelligence and intellect and abilities to be able to make a beautiful omelet and a delicious omelet. That is something that we owe God a debt of gratitude, our acknowledgement and our thanks, and not to take the ability to cook and to build and to sew and to shear animals for their wool and all of the other malachot that we're not allowed to do on Shabbat. It's taking those activities, abstaining from them, and placing them, in Diane Grunfeld's words, at the feet of the Creator, so to speak, in homage to Him for the creation of the world and what He gave as gifts to the human being. I always say if a snake wants to have an egg, he steals one from a nest, he bites into it with his fangs, he sucks out the content, and that's it. He does not have the pleasure and the luxury of an omelet or a soft-boiled 2-minute, 3-minute, 5-minute, or a hard-boiled egg, or a poached egg, or shakshuka, or whatever you're in the mood for. That is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the human being. So too is the field. This is not my field. This is not my vineyard. Yes, I have a deed which indicates not ownership in a spiritual plane. It indicates guardianship. God has entrusted me with this vineyard, and I have rules and instructions that I am required to follow. I have a lot of don'ts, but a lot of them have a flip side of a do, which makes me a partner of with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not, I am a tenant farmer, and I don't care what the boss says. He gets his cut, and I get whatever is left. It's much more than that. It's as if God said, in this case, to the Jewish people, I want you to care for the needy, not just when you feel like it, but when you're supposed to. And it comes in various forms of these mitzvot which we were talking about. Now, in the parsha also of Kedoshim, you have other examples of this. You have the mitzvah to pay a day laborer on time. And there's a prohibition elsewhere, or vice versa, I'm just looking on my list here to make sure that I have it correct. In Parshat Kedoshim is the prohibition. The payment of a hired person is not to be delayed. Elsewhere in the Torah is a mitzvah of biyomo titein scharo. You pay the guy on time. Now this is, again, two sides of the coin, not perfectly matched up, and I'll give you the illustration why not, but important to see both sides. Somebody is working for you, you are not allowed to take advantage of him. You hired him, you're paying him for his work, but you can't take advantage, which includes, not only, but it includes pushing off his payment. He could need it now. In fact, it's very likely that a day laborer or a wage earner like that needs a regular paycheck in order to pay his bills and feed his family. And if you are the owner who has a different structure of finance from the produce that you produce, it does not give you permission to treat your workers poorly. Now here's an interesting aspect of this. Let's translate it now not to the guy that you picked, that you hired to pick apples from your orchard. I don't know who among the people listening to my voice now actually have ever hired someone to pick apples. But most of us have hired a babysitter. Most of us have taken a taxi ride. Most of us have gone to the barber or a hairdresser. In these examples, and plenty more, you have the situation of hiring someone to do a task for you for which you are committed to pay him or her. And the payment is expected to be on time, so that when you take a taxi ride, you don't walk away from the taxi driver and say, put it on my bill. But the proper procedure of biyomo titein scharo and the prohibition in kedoshim of delaying the wages is to pay him at the conclusion of the ride. A babysitter, when you come home from 3-4 hours out, to pay her. A cleaner in the house after 3-4 hours of work gets paid. A house painter who takes 3-4 days to do the big job gets paid according to whatever the conditions were, maybe a down payment here for expenses, and then after cleanup payment. And to delay is not proper. It's almost akin, I really should say it's akin to stealing, because in the context of the verses, it's lumped together. I mean, it's separated in the counting of mitzvot, but it's lumped together in psukim with actual stealing and robbing. When it comes to this situation, let me just give you one hypothetical. And maybe it's not so hypothetical. You have a cleaning person. And the arrangement is X number of shekels or Y number of dollars per hour. At the end of the time, let's put it in Israel and let's put it in shekalim. At the end of the time, you owe the person 150 shekel. You have only a 200 shekel note in your pocket. You say to the person, you have change of a 200. No, I'm sorry, I don't. There are two possibilities here. You can say, is it okay if I pay you tomorrow or next week when you come? And if the person says yes, then there are two possibilities. The person really means, yes, it's okay if you pay them next week. Or they're saying it's okay because they're embarrassed to say, I really could use the money now. So if they really could use the money now, and they're supposed to get it now, then by withholding it, you not only don't fulfill the mitzvah to pay on time, but you violate the prohibition, which is in the category of stealing, of delaying the wages. And when the person is really honestly saying, I don't need it now, I could take it next week, then you have not violated the prohibition of delaying the wages. But guess what? You have not fulfilled the mitzvah in the Torah to pay on time. And that's no small thing. The person can waive the prohibition away, but he can't undo the fact that you didn't fulfill the mitzvah like you're supposed to. So what are you supposed to do? In many cases, it would be, here's 200 shekel. You don't have change. I don't have change. You'll give me back 50 shekel tomorrow or next week when you come. Then you have fulfilled biyomo titein scharo, in addition to not violating the prohibition of delaying the wages. And the fact that this happens in a taxi or in a babysitting situation or in a barbershop. I remember sitting in a regular barbershop that I used many years, and I noticed something posted on the mirror. And one time when the barber had to go answer a phone call, I looked closely because it was in small print, and I read it. And I was blown away by a list of many mitzvot that a person should have kavanah, intention to fulfill, or prohibitions not to violate when he's sitting in a barber chair taking a haircut. Parshat Kedoshim, again, forbids the rounding of the corners of the head. Don't want to get into the details of that means, but it means you have to have some sideburn. And there are Hasidim who take it to the extent of long side curls, known as payas. And there are others who are not Hasidim who also do that. In the Chardali-flavored religious Zionists, the ones who are whatever. And otherwise, regular person has a decent sideburn and does not shave it with a razor, nor does he shave his face with a razor. And that is a mitzvah to have kavanah that I am not violating those mitzvot when I'm here on the barber chair. And if it was a non-religious barber or not Jewish barber who says, should I use the razor on your face? You say no. That's a fulfillment of the mitzvah. When it comes to, so on this list was the business about paying on time. Now, paying on time is something you're mostly going to do anyway. But the Chafetz Chaim writes, isn't it special, I'm putting those words, that when you do a good deed, which is also a command, that you have intention to fulfill the command and not just be a nice guy and do the mitzvah. And I believe that is an important message and lesson that comes from the proliferation of mitzvot in this sedra. And sorry, I did not scratch the surface. All right, I scratched the surface. I did not dig deeply yet into this sedra, and I'm not going to because I'm not going to have the time to do that. But it's an amazing thing when you look at a list of the mitzvot in Parshat Kedoshim. And again, I'll go back to the opening words of the sedra. Every mitzvah, not just the 51 in this sedra, but all the mitzvot of the Torah should be seen in the light of that supra command of Kedoshim Tihiyu. When you walk out of a cab and you pay the driver and you smile and you have in mind, you don't have to say it out loud, you don't have to say Hineni Muchana Mezuman, but when you have in mind to fulfill the command to pay on time, it should be done not grudgingly, but with a pride of I am doing a good thing and the right thing and the correct thing. Now, it might sound that, well, what are you going to do? Stiff the driver? He'll run out and hit you over the head with something. That might be so, but it doesn't change the fact that you have this attitude. And that's Kedoshim Tihiyu. Let me finish the show, certainly not the sedra, but finish the show with another collection of mitzvot that come within two verses. And they very much reflect each other. One of them is the mitzvah to reproach a fellow Jew who is doing the wrong thing. This follows the prohibition of hating a fellow Jew, and it is subsequent to this mitzvah, after a couple of them that get into the picture, is the mitzvah of affection for a fellow Jew in the famous V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. But the religious duty to rebuke a fellow Jew for improper behavior is hocheach tochiach et amitecha, is immediately followed by Velotisa alav chet, you shall not carry a sin because of what you're doing. And this is defined in oral law as the prohibition against shaming or embarrassing a fellow. Which means, here is a fellow who does not keep Shabbos properly, or does not keep kosher, or does not behave properly towards his parents, and you are capable of saying something. This is a very tricky thing, which I don't have the time to get into now, but there are people who will say, how can I tell him what to do? He'll laugh in my face, or he won't listen. You have to try. You have to figure out a way to do it. And the bottom line really is, if it's really impossible, you're not obligated to continue, because it could be counterproductive. But if it's a situation where you truly can have an influence, it has to be done in a very gentle, pleasant way. None of these words really do it justice, what you have to do. There are some great Talmidei Chachamim and Rabbanim of the past couple of generations who have said, we do not have the skill and the art and science of proper reproach to our fellow, because it often comes in the form of looking down your nose or being bossy or telling him what to do, and that's not the way it's supposed to be done. It's a very sensitive kind of thing, to the point where if you embarrass the person or shame him under many of the conditions, then that becomes a serious violation for you, to the point where there is a very sharp statement of Hamal bin Pnei Chaveiro Barabim Ki'ilu Shofech Dam, that embarrassing someone in public is like killing him. And there are all kind of explanations to that, and there are even sharper statements about that situation. And the amazing thing to note is the context of the prohibition of shaming a fellow is while you are reproaching him, which means he's doing something wrong, and you still have to be careful not to shame him. How much more so the prohibition of embarrassing someone or shaming someone in public or in front of other people when he isn't doing anything wrong. And that's something I think to take away from Parshat Kedoshim as well. Many, many other mitzvot. I leave it for another shiur, another show. And in the meantime, you can get it from plenty of other places also. And that's it for now. So I wish you a Shabbat Shalom. May you merit many, many mitzvot. Actually, I want to say one more thing. I apologize, but not really. The proliferation of mitzvot, which is very manifest in Kedoshim, and in Mishpatim, and next week in Emor, and in Re'eh, and in Shofetim, and in Ki Teitse, which are the six top-of-the-list mitzvah sedras, but in many other places also, the proliferation of mitzvot needs to be understood in the context of a Mishnah from Masechet Makot, which we quote after learning each chapter of Avot, Pirkei Avot, from after Pesach until Rosh Hashanah. It's a Mishnah that's borrowed, not from Masechet Avot, it's borrowed someplace else, as I said, from Makot. And it says the following, Rabbi Hananya ben Akashia Omer, Ratza HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lezakot et Yisrael. God wanted to merit the people of Israel, Lefichach hirba lahem Torah u'mitzvot. Therefore, he piled on us many, many mitzvot in many shapes and forms, not just gave us commands, but gave us a lot of commands to merit those who follow them. And what's not mentioned in the Mishnah is to debit the ones who don't follow it. But it's like a two-sided thing where you're doubling and tripling the stakes, and you could lose badly, but hopefully you will win very well. Shenemar Hashem Chafetz Lema'an Tzidko Yagdil Torah V'Yadir. That flavor of the Mishnah comes across when you look through this parsha and you see another mitzvah, another mitzvah, and another mitzvah. I'll give you one last example. I apologize again, but not really. There is an interesting trio of mitzvot. Let's take one mitzvah back from that. You're not allowed to steal. Okay, we all know that. You can't sneak into someone's house or over to his desk when he's not at it and take something that belongs to him to keep it for yourself. Obvious, I hope. But what happens if he gave you something to lend to you because you wanted to borrow it? Can I use your cell phone? Yeah, sure, here. And then when you come to him and say, where's my cell phone? And he says, what are you talking about? And he says, I lent you my cell phone. He says, no, you didn't. Or, yes, you did, but I gave it back to you. In that case, denying that you are in possession of something that belongs to someone else, that object having come into your hands in an acceptable way, is still a form of stealing. And that is a separate prohibition in the Torah, in Parshat Kedoshim. If it comes to it, and he actually takes you to court, to a Beit Din, and they, whatever time we're talking about, if they have that authority, and they would impose an oath, when you said, I borrowed it, but I returned it, and they would impose an oath on you that you have to say, yes, I borrowed it under oath, but I returned it, then that, if it's a lie, is another violation of swearing to a denial that you have something that belongs to someone else. I don't know how many I'm confusing now, but the next mitzvah in the Torah is the prohibition of swearing falsely. So you say, wait a minute. You're not allowed to deny that you have something that belongs to someone else, and you're not allowed to swear falsely. It follows from that that you can't swear falsely in denial of having something that belongs to someone else. Exactly overlapping. But it's a separate mitzvah. It's a separate prohibition. That's part of Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lezakot at Yisrael. Lefichach hirba lahem Torah u'mitzvot, Shene'emar Adonai Chafetz Lema'an Tzidko Yagdil Torah V'Yadir. Shabbat Shalom. Tizku l'mitzvot rabot. L'hishtamea. Get up.
menachem aval bonim kerachem aval bonim kerachem aval bonim kein tirachem Hashem oleinu kerachem
Kirachem Aleinu